From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar. Tuesday evening saw the 10th debate among Democratic hopefuls for the presidency. Those participating were former Vice President Joe Biden, former New York City Mayor Mike Bloomberg, former South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg, U.S. Senator from Minnesota Amy Klobuchar, U.S. Senator from Vermont Bernie Sanders, billionaire investor Tom Steyer, and U.S. Senator from Massachusetts Elizabeth Warren. The debate was hosted by CBS, and the following members of its staff took part: Nora O'Donnell, Gail King, Margaret Brennan, Major Garrett, and Bill Whitaker. We bring you excerpts of that conversation, which took place in Charleston, South Carolina, on Tuesday evening, for as much as time will allow.
Senator Sanders, we haven't had a national unemployment rate this low for this long in 50 years. Here in South Carolina, the unemployment rate is even lower. How will you convince voters that a Democratic socialist can do better than President Trump with the economy?
Well, you're right. The economy is doing really great for people like Mr. Bloomberg and other billionaires. In the last three years, billionaires in this country saw an $850 billion increase in their wealth. But you know what? For the ordinary American, things are not so good. Last year, real wage increases for the average worker were less than 1%. Half of our people are living paycheck to paycheck. 87 million Americans have no health insurance or are underinsured. 45 million people are struggling with student debt. 500,000 people tonight are sleeping out on the street, including 30,000 veterans. That is not an economy that's working for the American people. That's an economy working for the 1%. We're going to create an economy for all, not just wealthy campaign contributors.
Mayor Bloomberg.
Senator.
Mayor Bloomberg, I'll let you respond to that. Do you think Senator Sanders' economy would be better for America than President Trump?
I think that Donald Trump thinks it would be better if he's president. I do not think so. Vladimir Putin thinks that Donald Trump should be president of the United States. And that's why Russia is helping you get elected, so you'll lose to him.
Let me tell Mr. Putin. Okay, I'm not a good friend of President Xi of China. I think President Xi is an authoritarian leader. And let me tell Mr. Putin, who interfered in the 2016 election, try to bring Americans against Americans. Hey, Mr. Putin, if I'm president of the United States, trust me, you're not going to interfere in any more American elections.
Senator Warren.
We know what the president, what Russia wants. It's chaos.
So look. The way I see this is that Bernie is winning right now because the Democratic Party is a progressive party, and progressive ideas are popular ideas, even if there are a lot of people on this stage who don't want to say so. You know, but Bernie and I agree on a lot of things, but I think I would make a better president than Bernie. And the reason for that is that getting a progressive agenda enacted is going to be really hard, and it's going to take someone who digs into the details to make it happen. Bernie and I both wanted to help rein in Wall Street. In 2008, we both got our chance. But I dug in, I fought the big banks, I built the coalitions, and I won. Bernie and I both want to see universal health care. But Bernie's plan doesn't explain how to get there, doesn't show how we're going to get enough allies into it, doesn't show enough about how we're going to pay for it. I dug in, I did the work, and then Bernie's team trashed me for it. We need a president who is going to dig in, do the hard work, and actually get it done. Progressives have got one shot, and we need to spend it with a leader who will get something done.
Mayor Buttigieg, we want to bring you in this conversation. Why would the Russians want to be working on behalf of Bernie Sanders?
I'll tell you what the Russians want. They don't have a political party. They want chaos. And chaos is what is coming our way. I mean, look, if you think the last 4 years has been chaotic, divisive, toxic, exhausting. Imagine spending the better part of 2020 with Bernie Sanders versus Donald Trump. Think about what that will be like for this country. And meanwhile, folks at home from South Carolina to South Bend are trying to figure out what any of this means for us. Because it's right that there is a progressive majority, an American majority, that wants to see real change, wants to see wages go up and go up faster than the cost of health and saving for retirement. But also, there's a majority of the American people who I think right now just want to be able to turn on the TV, see their president, and actually feel their blood pressure go down a little bit instead of up through the roof. No. We have an opportunity to set a different tone.
Bernie Sanders' analysis is right. The difference is I don't like his solutions. I don't believe that a government takeover of large parts of the economy makes any sense for working people or for families. I think that what we need to do is to present an alternative that includes a vibrant, competitive private sector. But we all know unchecked capitalism has failed. The answer is not for the government to take over the private sector, though. The answer is for us to break the corporate stranglehold on our government and have the government work for the people again.
Vice President Biden?
Let me just finish, because we need to have an alternative to Donald Trump. I'm talking about doubling the minimum wage, cutting taxes by 10% for everybody who makes less than $250,000, and creating over 4.5 million good-paying union jobs. Donald Trump stinks. He's incompetent as a steward of the American economy. We have to show that we can create a growing, prosperous economy that works for American working people.
Mr. Steyer, thank you. Your time's up. Vice President Biden?
You know, we talk about progressive. Let's talk about being progressive. Walking distance here is Mother Emanuel Church. 9 people shot dead by a white supremacist. Bernie voted 5 times against the Brady Bill and wanted a waiting period. No, let me finish. And waited a waiting period of 12 hours. I'm not saying he's responsible for the 9 deaths, but that man would not have been able to get that weapon with the waiting period had been what I suggest until you are cleared. In addition to that, being progressive, he thought Barack Obama, he wanted a primary, he said we should primary Barack Obama. Someone should. And in fact, the president was weak and our administration was, in fact, not up to it. Look, folks, let's talk about progressive. Progressive is getting things done. And that's what we got done. We got a lot done.
Senator Sanders, your response.
You know, Pete mentioned, I'm hearing my name mentioned a little bit tonight. I wonder why. And maybe, you know, Pete mentions what the American people want. I will tell you, Pete, what the American people want, and Joe, what the American people want. They don't want candidates to be running to billionaires for huge amounts of funding.
All right, let's clear this up once and for all.
Pete has gotten funding from over 50 billionaires.
Joe,
I think, has gotten a little bit more. What the American people want, by the way, and a lot of the issues we'll be discussing tonight are issues I raised 4 years ago. Raising the minimum wage to a living wage, $15 an hour. Making public colleges and universities tuition free. And finally, doing what every other major country on earth does, guaranteeing health care to all people as a human right through a Medicare for All single-payer system.
I can't allow this to stand because it's just not true. Senator Sanders has got people believing something that is untrue about my campaign. The idea that most of my campaign is funded by billionaires.
I didn't say that, Pete.
50 people. All right. In Charleston alone, just in Charleston, over 2,000 people have contributed to my campaign. That means the dollars that have come to my campaign just from Charleston is more than the dollars that have come from the 50 people that you mentioned. Grassroots contributions are the lifeblood of my campaign. In fact, I shouldn't miss the opportunity. If you're watching right now and you support my campaign, go to PeteForAmerica.com and chip in. And if you're watching right now and you're a billionaire, I will raise your taxes. But if you'd like to defeat Donald Trump, please go to PeteForAmerica.com and donate the legal maximum of $2,800 if you're a billionaire.
All right, Mayor Buttigieg, Vice President Biden, I want to bring us to another topic. We're in South Carolina. It's the first primary with a significant black voting population. Your numbers appear to be slipping with black voters. And I'm wondering if you could respond about why that is happening to you at this particular time.
Well, first of all, the latest poll I saw, my numbers, I'm still 15 points ahead. The latest poll.
Yes, yes, you're correct.
Well, look, correct.
But Senator Sanders is in striking distance of you. You are within the margin of error in this state.
Well, it depends on which poll. Look, I've earned the vote. I've worked like the devil to earn the vote of the African-American community, not just here, but across the country. I've been coming here for years and years, creating jobs here, making sure that the port, for example, that employs 1 in 11 people. We put $500 million in our administration just into this county. We've created jobs for people. The people know me. My entire career has been wrapped up in dealing with civil rights and civil liberties. I don't expect anything. I plan to earn the vote. I'm here to ask. I'm here to earn. But folks, I intend to win South Carolina, and I will win the African-American vote here in South Carolina.
Mr. Biden, will you continue if you do not win South Carolina? You have said that South Carolina will determine the outcome of this presidential race. If you don't win South Carolina, will you continue in this
race? I will win South Carolina.
All right, sir. Mayor Bloomberg, I'd like to bring you in this conversation. I want to ask you about a question that impacts the black and brown community. You've apologized for stop and frisk repeatedly. What exactly are you apologizing for?
We let it get out of control. And when I realized that, I cut it back by 95%. And I've apologized and asked for forgiveness. I've met with black leaders to try to get an understanding of how I can better position myself and what I should have done and what I should do next time. But let me tell you, I have been working very hard. We've improved the school system for black and brown students in New York City. We've increased the jobs that are available to them. We've increased the housing that's available to them.
But what more can you do about like this issue, Mr. Mayor, to put people's fears and skepticism to rest?
I think
continues to follow you.
No, well, that's because it's in their interest to promote that. But if you talk to the people in New York City, I have over 100 black elected officials that have endorsed me. A lot of them are in the audience tonight. And I've earned the respect of people in New York City. I was the mayor of the largest, most populous city in the United States for 12 years. And people will tell you it's a lot better city today. It is safer for everybody. The school system is better. The budget's under control. We've done the things that people need in New York City for all ethnicities.
Mayor Buttigieg? Mayor to mayor, you've certainly had your issues with the black community as well. Do you think the New York City's implementation of stop and frisk was racist?
Yes, in effect it was, because it was about profiling people based on their race. And the mayor even said that they disproportionately stopped white people too often and minorities too little. And I'm not here to score points. I come at this with a great deal of humility because we have had a lot of issues, especially when it comes to racial justice and policing in my own community. And I come to this with some humility because I'm conscious of the fact that there's 7 white people on this stage talking about racial justice. None of us have the experience, the lived experience of, for example, walking down the street or in a mall and feeling eyes on us, regarding us as dangerous without knowing the first thing about us just because of the color of our skin. None of us have the experience that black women have had that drives that maternal mortality gap that we are all rightly horrified by, of going into a doctor and being less likely to have your description of being in pain believed because of your race. Since we don't have the experience, the next best thing we can do is actually listen to those who do.
I know that if I were black, my success would have been a lot harder to achieve. And I know a lot of black people that if they were white, it would have been a lot easier for them. That's just a fact, and we've got to do something about it than rather just demagogue about it.
Senator Klobuchar, was the way that the mayor implemented stop and frisk racist?
Yes. And I think that what we need to do, instead of just reviewing everything from the past, is talk about where we're going to go forward. Martin Luther King once said that we are all tied in a single garment of destiny, and that what affects one of us directly affects all of us indirectly. So when there is racism in the criminal justice system, then we need to fix it. And to me, that means sentencing reform like the First Step Act and extending that to the states with the Second Step Act. It means equal opportunity, because if we don't pass Representative Clyburn's bill out of South Carolina here to invest in impoverished communities, we're never going to get to that single garment of destiny. And we also need to do something about child care, about making sure we increase the minimum wage, and then finally, voting. While we are all sitting here debating, Wisconsin has kicked hundreds of thousands of people off of their voting rolls.
Thank
Georgia
you,
kicked 100,000 off. As president, I will get voting rights to be a reality for everyone.
Senator Warren, I'm coming to you. I want to direct this question to you because Mayor Bloomberg has said he got in this race late because he doesn't believe that any of you on stage can beat Donald Trump. You said Mayor Bloomberg is not the safest candidate. He is the riskiest candidate. What did you mean by that?
I mean that Mayor Bloomberg, let's think of it this way. We're here in Charleston, and you know who's going to be in Charleston later this week? Is Donald Trump. He's going to be here to raise money for his buddy, Senator Lindsey Graham, who funded Lindsey Graham's campaign for re-election last time. It was Mayor Bloomberg. And that's not the only right-wing senator that Mayor Bloomberg has funded. In 2016, he dumped $12 million into the Pennsylvania Senate race to help re-elect an anti-choice right-wing Republican senator. And I just want to say, the woman challenger was terrific. She lost by a single point. In 2012, he scooped in to try to defend another Republican senator against a woman challenger. That was me. It didn't work, but he tried hard. I don't care how much money Mayor Bloomberg has. The core of the Democratic Party will never trust him. He has not earned their trust. I will. And the fact that he cannot earn the trust of the core of the Democratic Party means he is the riskiest candidate standing on this stage.
All right, Senator Warren, thank you. Mayor Bloomberg, would you like to respond? Mayor Bloomberg.
I have been training for this job since I stepped on the pile that was still smoldering on 9/11. I know what to do. I've shown I know how to run a country. I've run the city, which is almost the same size, as bigger than most countries in the world. I am not the least. I'm the one choice that makes some sense. I have the experience, I have the resources, and I have the record. And all of the sideshows that the senator wants to bring up have nothing to do with that. When people hired me to run New York City three times in an overwhelmingly Democratic progressive city, they elected me again and again.
Mr. Vice President?
I was mentioned in this.
I'd like to respond.
No,
go ahead, Senator.
He called me out by name in this and referred to what I talk about as a sideshow. You know, this is personal for me. When I was 21 years old, I got my first job as a special education teacher. I loved that job. And by the end of the first year, I was visibly pregnant. The principal wished me luck and gave my job to someone else. Pregnancy discrimination, you bet. But I was 21 years old. I didn't have a union to protect me, and I didn't have any federal law on my side. So I packed up my stuff, and I went home. At least I didn't have a boss who said to me, kill it, the way that Mayor Bloomberg
never
alleged
to
have said to one of his pregnant employees. People want a chance to hear. People want a chance to hear from the women who have
I never
worked.
Said that.
I want
and,
to allow
and
the
for the record, if she was
respond.
A teacher in New York City, she would never have had that problem. We treated our teachers the right way, and the unions will tell you exactly that.
Well, Mayor Bloomberg, Senator Warren has raised...
Let us have the women have an opportunity to speak. The Bloomberg corporations and Mayor Bloomberg himself have been accused of discrimination. They are bound by non-disclosures so that they cannot speak. If he says there is nothing to hide here, then sign a blanket release and let those women speak out so that they can tell their stories the way I can tell my story without having to be going to be sued by a billionaire.
Thank you. We have a number of issues discussed tonight, but I want to give the mayor an opportunity to respond because she has raised concerns about women in your workplace. At the last debate, you said some of your female employees might not have liked some of your jokes. Did these women take your jokes wrong, or were you wrong to make the jokes?
Probably wrong to make the jokes. I don't remember what they were, so I assume if it bothered them, I was wrong, and I apologize. I'm sorry for that. But what happened here is we went back 40 years, and we could only find three cases where women said they were uncomfortable. Nobody accused me of doing anything other than just making a comment or two. And what the senator did suggest was that we release these women from the nondisclosure agreement. I did that 2 days later, and my company has said we will not use non-disclosure agreements ever again. The senator has got it, and I don't know what else she wants us to do.
Oh, I'll be
clear. We're following exactly what she asked to do.
I'll tell you exactly what I
want. And the trouble is, with this senator, enough is never enough for what this. I'm going to start focusing on some of these other things. We just cannot continue to relitigate this every time. We did what she asked. And thank you. We've probably made the world better because of it. And by my company renouncing using these, we probably changed, hopefully, the corporate landscape all across America.
No, if you get nominated, we'll be relitigating this all year.
Do what I ask.
Senator Warren, that is a very serious charge that you leveled at the mayor.
Yes.
You told a woman to get an abortion. What evidence do you have of that?
Her own words.
And Mayor Bloomberg, could you respond to this?
I never said it. Period. End of story.
Look,
categorically never said it when I was accused of doing it. We couldn't figure out what she was talking about. But right now, I'm sorry if she heard what she thought she heard or whatever happened. I didn't take any pleasure in that. And we've just got to go on, but I never said it. Come on.
What I asked the mayor to do is to do a release of all people who have discrimination
claims. We are doing that, Senator.
We want to get to the issue. We want to get to the issue of electability and the ideological difference within the Democratic Party. Good. Senator Sanders, the cost of your agenda. Yesterday, you released information about how you will pay for your major proposals, but not all of your details are clear. You've proposed more than $50 trillion in new spending. You've said Medicare for All will
over
cost $30 trillion. But you can only explain how you'll pay for just about half of that. Can you do the math for the rest of us?
How many hours do you have?
Two.
That's the problem. It's not the problem. All right, let's talk about Medicare for All. I'm sure you're familiar with a new study that just came out of Yale University, published in Lancet magazine, one of the prestigious medical journals in the world. You know what it said? Medicare for All will lower healthcare costs in this country by $450 billion a year and save 68,000 lives of people who otherwise would have died. What we need to do is to do what every other major country on earth does, guarantee healthcare to all people, not have thousands of separate insurance plans which are costing us some $500 billion a year to administer. Our plan, we have laid out options all over the place. One of the options is a 7.5% payroll tax on employers, which will save them substantial sums of money.
Let me respond to this.
Does the math add up?
No, the math does not add up. In fact, just on 60 Minutes this weekend, he said he wasn't going to rattle through the nickels and the dimes. Well, let me tell you how many nickels and dimes we're talking about. Nearly $60 trillion. Do you know how much that is for all of his programs?
That is
three times the American economy, not the federal government, the entire American economy. The Medicare for All plan alone, page 8, clearly says that it will kick 149 million Americans off their current health insurance in 4 years. That is true. As one prominent Democrat once said, we should pay attention to where the voters of this country are, Bernie. That prominent Democrat was Barack Obama a few months ago. And I think that's what we should do. They are not with you on spending nearly $60 trillion. I think we should do is make things more affordable, nonprofit public option, make sure we're paying for long-term care better, take on the pharmaceuticals like you and I have done together, and do something for the people of America instead of a bunch of broken promises that sound good on bumper stickers.
Mr. Steyer.
I think we're talking about
We'll get to you, Mr. Sanders.
Let's talk about it.
Can I say something?
Look, first of all,
let me go.
Tom, I think she was talking about my plan, not yours.
I think we were talking about math, and it doesn't take 2 hours to do the math. Because let's talk about what it adds up to.
Let's talk about math.
Let's talk about math indeed.
Let's talk about math.
Okay, so here's the math. No, here's the math.
Excuse me, can I respond to the attack?
Doing nothing is what will happen.
Senator Sanders, you're allowed a quick response, and then we would like to allow the other candidates.
Moderator, guys.
Senator Sanders?
Moderator, is it my turn?
This helps a lot, doesn't it?
You have been name-checked. You are allowed to respond.
Okay. What the Health and Human Services have said in analyzing health care costs, what recent Yale study has said, is that your program would cost some $50 trillion over a 10-year period. We would continue to pay, in some cases, 10 times more for the same exact prescription drugs. What every study out there, conservative or progressive, says, Medicare for all will save money. Ours will cost about $45 billion, not $60
trillion. No, I was talking about my program. Senator Sanders, we would like to bring Mr. Steyer in on this conversation.
Mr. Steyer, please.
I was talking about all your programs.
Excuse me, Amy. This conversation shows a huge risk for the Democratic Party. We are looking at a party that has decided that we're either going to support someone who's a Democratic socialist or somebody who has a long history of being a Republican. And let me say that I got into this race because I wanted to fight for economic justice, for racial justice, and to make sure we had climate justice for the American people. And I am scared. If we cannot pull this party together, if we go to one of those extremes, we take a terrible risk of re-electing Donald Trump.
Thank you, Mr. Steyer.
And that is something, I still have some time, and let me just say this. That is a risk that will hurt the American people in a way that none of us on this stage should be willing to risk.
Thank you. Let's keep this topic going, Mayor Pete.
So let's do some math. Senator Sanders at one point said it was going to be $40 trillion, then it was $30, then it was $17. It's an incredible shrinking price tag. At some point has said it is unknowable to even see what the price tag would be. Now there are new numbers going. I'll tell you exactly what it adds up to. It adds up to 4 more years of Donald Trump, Kevin McCarthy as Speaker of the House, and the inability to get the Senate into Democratic hands. The time has come for us to stop acting like the presidency is the only office that matters. Not only is this a way to get Donald Trump reelected, we got a House to worry about. We got a Senate to worry about. And this is really important. Look,
hello.
If you want to keep the House in Democratic hands, you might want to check with the people who actually turned the House blue. 40 Democrats who are not running on your platform. They are running away from your platform as fast as they possibly can. I want to send those Democrats back to the United States House. Let's listen to them when they say that they don't want to be out there defending Senator Sanders.
Thank you, Mayor Buttigieg. Vice President Biden, please.
I guess the only way you do this is jump in and speak twice as long as you should. Here's the deal. Look. A guy is a friend of mine down here named Fritz Hollings. He passed away. He said, you want to know what a man and woman will do? Look what they've done. Look what they've done. You talk about concerned about race. Well, my good friend on the end of this platform, he, in fact, bought a system that was a private prison system. After he knew that, in fact, what happened was they hogtied young men in prison here in this state. They, in fact, made sure that in Georgia they did not have health care for the people who were being held. They, in fact, went on and he said, after he knew that, he bought it. And then he said he was proud of his accomplishment. You talk about what we're talking about with Bernie. Bernie, in fact, hasn't passed much of anything. The fact of the matter is,
but I get to answer that.
The fact is, here's the deal. I'm not out of time. You spoke over time, and I'm going to talk. Here's the deal. The fact of the matter is, look at what's happening here. Look at what's happening here. We have to win the Senate back. And by the way, I went into all of those races that got 41 new Democrats. The majority of them are supporting me for president.
And Mr. Vice President, I have to allow.
Okay.
Yes, Mr. Mayor.
Wait a second.
Mr. Mayor, you're allowed to respond.
I bought stock in a prison company thinking they'd do a better job, and I investigated and I sold it.
Okay.
You knew when you bought it they'd done that.
I get to answer this question. And in fact, since then, I've worked to end the use of private prisons in my home state, and we've ended it.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.